Thanks for downloading this show from PC One. Before we get rolling, here's a word from one of the folks who helped bring you this podcast.
The following program is a PodcastOne.com production.
He started in a small town in Texas. Worked his ass off to become one of the most famous wrestlers of all time.
We're going to take care of business tonight, and that's the bottom line.
And now, he's dominating the world of on-demand audio.
And he's doing it for the working man.
This is a damn good outlet for me to spew the bullshit off my brain.
Yeah!
This is the Steve Austin Show. Unleashed.
All right, everybody, welcome to Steve Austin Show Unleashed. I'm coming to you down here in Edna, Texas. I've been down here in South Texas, just got here yesterday, and you ain't going to believe this. When I was packing my bags, I packed all my microphones, all my cords, but I forgot my trusty Zoom H4n recorder. You talk about an immediate clusterfuck. So what do I do? Go to Best Buy in Victoria, Texas, and buy another one? I'm in a bad position here. So I call Stacy over there in the 90210, and I said, Stacy, what the fuck am I going to do? And Stacy says, don't worry. Just when you get a signal, call into the studio on Skype, and I'll record you. Right now, Stacy is on the line, except I can't hear because my computer's got a malfunction in it. What a clusterfuck. Nonetheless, I'm down here in South Texas. God damn, I remember the days when I was running roughshod at fullback at Edna High School. The Edna Cowboys. God damn, on a Friday night, we would whip some ass. Down here visiting my folks, I went down to the Broken Skull Ranch to pick up my pickup truck. God damn, I got into San Antonio yesterday, and we was on an airplane, and the captain says, hey, man, we're going to have to fly around for about 30 minutes because there's a storm over the San Antonio airport. And I'm thinking, man, I'm looking out the window and I'm thinking, shit, everything looks good to me. So what the fuck is the problem? Anyway, about 30 minutes later, we end up landing in San Antonio. And I had a limo driver driving a Suburban to pick me up and take me down to the ranch because I'm driving my pickup back to California with my utility trailer. I'm moving all my shit out of there. I'll tell you more about that in a minute. So anyway, we drive the 90 miles down to Tilden, Texas. We go down the 15-mile county road to my front gate, and I will tell you what, in all my 10 years of owning that place, it has never rained so goddamn hard. The rain was coming down sideways, and then when we got on that county road, it started hailing. We had to get at least 4 or 5 inches, and the rain was coming sideways. The wind was blowing like a motherfucker. We was going down Highway 16, and I'm thinking, holy shit, I'm trying to get all my shit out of here, and we're probably going to die on the side of the road because of damn 18-wheelers and all the stuff coming down the road. Nobody can see shit, water splashing up, 6 inches of rain standing in the road. We get to my gate, and I get out, and the driver says, hang on, I'll get an umbrella for you. And y'all know what I wear. I'm wearing a pair of camouflage shorts, some tennis shoes, and a dry-fit shirt. I get out there with that umbrella, and it's like I might as well not even take an umbrella. It was raining so hard, the wind was blowing so goddamn hard, I had that umbrella propped up against me. And it's only 5 p.m., but the clouds are so black, I can't see the combination locks on my gate. So I'm trying to use the headlights from the Suburban. The Suburban headlights weren't even bright enough. I say, fuck it. I go back and I get my flashlight out of my backpack because I always carry a flashlight. I go back to the combination lock. I get all the numbers in. I open the lock, open the gate, go jump in the damn Suburban, and I am wet, covered from head to toe. We're in the first gate. We're on my property. But there's one more gate to go. The high-fence gate. We go a half mile, and as soon as I step out, I'm in 8-inch-deep water. My goddamn shoes are just wetter than shit. I wish I had my mud boots on. I finally get the code to the goddamn high-fence gate. I hit the remote control. The gate swings open. I jump back in the Suburban, and I tell the driver, I said, goddamn it, I said, just head over to my barn. Put all my stuff in the barn. I'll jump in my pickup truck and I'll drive you out and click all the gates for you. So anyway, I get down to the ranch, get him out. And what has happened here is after about 10 years of owning the ranch down there in South Texas, the world-famous Broken Skull Ranch, I decided to sell that place about a year and a half ago. Myself and my wife started talking about it, and after about 10 years of ownership, give or take, it was just becoming too much of a burden to go down there 1,500 miles one way, then 1,500 miles back. And during the regular part of the year when I'm trying to do the bulk of my work, I just couldn't spend enough time down there. And then when I went down there for the November through January swing, you know, it just got to be a little too much. So I'm going to give you guys a podcast about the Broken Skull Ranch, because I have sold my ranch in Texas, but I did not sell the name. There will be another Broken Skull Ranch. I don't know where it will be yet. It may be in the Hill Country, Texas. It may be in West Texas. It could be, I don't know where it could be. It could be anywhere. And so right now, the Broken Skull Ranch is a place in my mind. A place in my mind to get outdoors, enjoy the outdoors, ride my mules, get in my four-wheel drive vehicles, and just chill out. There will be another Broken Skull Ranch, but I've sold the property in Tilden, Texas. I am still a dual resident of California and Texas because I still have property in the great state of Texas, and I could end up with another ranch there. But closing the chapter on that, as I drive back to California, I'm going to think about the 10 years of ownership and all the fun times and all the bad times and all the bullshit that happened out there. And I think the people that bought that ranch for me got one of the best ranches in Texas. It means a lot to me. I'm going to process it on the way back to California. As I locked that low fence gate there at the county road for the last time, I kind of looked back down that road towards that high fence with a little bit of sadness, because I'm going to miss that place. But I'll give you a whole podcast about the whole ball of wax as far as the decision goes to sell that place, just to find something that's a little bit closer. That place is near and dear to my heart, and it always will be. So goodbye to the Broken Skull Ranch in Tilden, Texas. And as I hit the pause button in my life and decide where that next place is going to be, that will be the new Broken Skull Ranch as I continue to enjoy the outdoors and everything that goes with it. Anyway, now I'm going to get all sentimental and sad on the open of the show, but that's what I'm doing down here in Texas. I'm about to make my way back. I packed up my goddamn truck yesterday and this morning, and I'll be damned if Ted didn't leave a big-ass shoulder mount there in his double wide. And I'm riding back to California. I've got an industrial clock from the 1920s. I've got all my other stuff. I've got my jam box. And sitting shotgun, riding with me in my cramped up cab and a half Chevy Z71, 2003-year model with 77,000 miles, I've got about a 17-point buck. He's a 170-class deer, non-typical. That's a gross score. And he's riding shotgun with me. So I guess when I get into the high-occupancy vehicle lane, I can ride in that son of a bitch, because I can say I have a fucking passenger. If a highway patrolman pulls me over and says, "What are you doing in the HOV lane?" I'm saying, "Talk to Buck over there and ask him what the fuck's going on. We got two people in this motherfucker, so leave us alone. We're going to Cali, and I'm in a goddamn hurry." I'll probably pull over somewhere and get a Diablo sandwich and a Dr. Pepper because I'm in a goddamn hurry. But enough about that shit, folks. I'm headed back to Cali. But tonight I am in Edna, Texas, visiting with my mom and dad, my brothers. Maybe I get a chance to see my sister. I know I'm going to hang out with my nephew, Neil, see what the hell he's up to. But the second part of my conversation with Vince Russo is coming up, and we're going to get into how pro wrestling has changed since the Attitude Era. And Vince also offers up a little insight into how creative worked back then and what it was like to work with a locker room full of so many guys who were really, really over. And as you know, Vince Russo, I always love talking to him. He is very opinionated and speaks his mind. So let's get to part two with Vince Russo after I tell you about my wife's latest adventures with Blue Apron. My wife loves Blue Apron, as you already know, and she loves the fact that they have vegetarian and vegan options. So here's what she made this week. Spanish-style potato and chickpea stew with Swiss chard. Yeah, that's a mouthful. No pun intended. And thanks to Blue Apron, she was eating those delicious home-cooked dinners in less than 40 minutes. My wife also loves the fact that Blue Apron gets delivered right to our front door, and that all the ingredients are fresh and measured out in perfect proportions. And Blue Apron is easy to use. Every meal comes with step-by-step, easy-to-follow recipe cards. And like I already said, can be made in 40 minutes or less. And I'm telling you, a few Blue Apron meals under your belt, and you will be a gourmet chef. You can choose your meals each week and your delivery options. There's no weekly commitment, so you get only deliveries when you want them. And Blue Apron uses only fresh, high-quality ingredients in all their recipes. And believe me, my wife would not be cooking up these Blue Apron meals if the ingredients weren't up to her high standards. You can see this week's full menu options and get your first three meals free with free shipping at blueapron.com/unleashed. You'll love how good the food tastes and how easy it is to make home-cooked meals with Blue Apron. So get on it. Go to blueapron.com/unleashed. That's blueapron.com/unleashed.
Hey everyone, it's Sean Wheelock. On Sean Funky and the Baddest Man, Podcast One's newest MMA show, Ben Askren and Joe Warren take down Conor McGregor, George St. Pierre, Gabby Garcia, Frank Shamrock, Douglas Lima, and it's only our first show. Download new episodes of Sean Funky and the Baddest Man this and every Wednesday at PodcastOne.com, the Podcast One app, and subscribe on iTunes.
Steve Austin, Unleashed.
Okay, here we go. Round two with Vince Russo, and let's jump right in with something you said in the Tuesday show. You said wrestling has changed. How has it changed?
I just find it very... Listen, based on what I grew up on, okay, like I said, I tell the story a million times. My first vision were the Valiant Brothers and Lou Albano. From that point on, I held wrestlers in a very, very, very high regard. And I was always respectful to the position because I knew it took a unique breed. That's why even as a writer, I never got involved between the ropes. I never got involved in a match. I never told guys what to do when it came to working, because I had such a high respect for the art of it. Somewhere along the line, in my opinion, the bar has become so lowered that anybody can become a professional wrestler. Steve, I am an avid baseball fan. Avid baseball fan. The players in the major league are major leaguers. In my opinion, when I watch WWE today, which is the premier sports entertainment company in the world, I'm seeing a good majority of single A players that, based on the wrestlers I've seen over the years, have no business being in the main company in the United States. I don't know how that happened. When I was writing for the Attitude Era, every single person on that roster deserved to be there. Now I get insulted because I turn on my TV set and I'm like, well, I guess anybody could be a professional wrestler nowadays. And that insults me because of the people I worked with and the people I grew up.
So why in your mind do you feel anybody can be a pro wrestler now? I mean,
do you want to know the truth, Steve? Can I be honest with you? I don't want to get you any heat.
Yeah, you can be honest with me.
Bro, the biggest star in the history of the wrestling business couldn't work a lick, and his name was Hulk Hogan. Okay, and Hulk Hogan can still earn a paycheck today. And that's the problem. Yeah, bro, they're all good workers. But if you're not a wrestling fan, you don't care about the work. That's why the Attitude Era was so popular. If you were a wrestling fan, we had great workers. If you were in college, we had hot chicks. You know, we had edgy programming. We had comedy. There was something for everybody. Now I turn on that show and there's a 20-minute match with good workers that doesn't mean anything and nobody looks like a star. That insults me, bro. That insults me because I think you need to be more than that to work for that company.
To me, I'll never forget, in 1989, I went down to Chris Adams Wrestling School, and you know, I saw the commercial on TV, World Class Championship Wrestling, and Jerry Jarrett just started buying that promotion, was going to turn into the USWA. There's a school, wrestling school, by gentleman Chris Adams. I said, oh, there it is. Since I've been watching pro wrestling since I was 7 or 8, I was, you know, hooked. Been driving down the Sportatorium, watching Devon Erics fight the Freebirds. He's larger than life characters. You know, Kerry looked like a Greek god. Michael Hayes was a heat-seeking missile. Terry Bam Bam Gordy was a big-ass bully. Kevin Von Erich is hellacious former football player, athlete. David was the worker of the family. And I was like, golly, I mean, this is the most awesome thing in the world. So I say, okay, I'm going to go down and enroll in that school. And so there I go. I put on my best Gerbeau pants, my black, my purple eyes-eyed shirt, my loafers. I looked like $1 million for a kid that didn't have a pot to piss and with long blonde hair working on a freight dock. And I was thinking, man, there's going to be a bunch of guys in this line. They're probably going to be like bodybuilders, powerlifters, monsters, you know, former football players. And, you know, I was one of the biggest guys, if not the biggest guy in the line, other than Dwayne, who was about a 400-pound guy. And it blew me away. Because I thought, you know, back in 89, I would go and become the 90 Rookie of the Year. I thought everybody wanted to be a pro wrestler. And so, you know, all these years later, I still think, man, where's everybody at that wants to be a pro wrestler? Because, you know, I just thought it'd be a cool thing to do. You went back to some of the days you're mentioning, Vince, you know, the era of the 300-pounders. For a while, man, I mean, there almost wasn't a guy on the roster that didn't weigh close to 300 pounds, if not over. And then Brett and Sean started main eventing and started carrying that company. But then you still had your monsters. But it just seems like, well, you've got a few monsters now, but things have changed, man. I don't know why things have changed.
I got to tell you something, bro. I just finished watching WrestleMania 10 and reviewing it for my show because it was the first WrestleMania I worked at. Okay. Bro, every guy that walked through that curtain looked like $100. And listen, I don't want to hear steroids anymore, bro. I spent 20 years around the boys, 25 years. Whether they were on steroids or not, they were in the gym every day. Bro, every day it was gym and diet, gym and diet, gym and diet. I don't care if you were Brett, if you were Owen, if you were Sean, every guy up and down that roster. I look at Raw today, some of these guys are not working out. I can look at somebody and say whether they're not working out or not. I mean, bro, if you're in a professional wrestling business and you're not in the gym every single day, in my opinion, you shouldn't be in the professional wrestling business. It's almost like if I'm Bryce Harper and I'm not in a batting cage every day. There's no difference, bro. I know when a guy's in a gym and when a guy's not in a gym.
But earlier in the conversation, when we just briefly touched upon China, Joni Lahr, you're talking about the it factor.
Yes.
Okay, now you're talking about the gym factor. But the gym factor, as many weights as you can push, is not going to give you the it factor.
No, bro, the guys that need to get in the gym don't have the it factor. But I can look at that show, bro, and I can tell you who is never going to get over. I can tell you, and I'm not talking about get over with the "this is awesome" chant. Bro, if you do a running somersault, you're over with the "this is anthem" chant. If you're a regular fan, you're looking at this guy saying, does a somersault really hurt somebody? That's who you're saying, bro. I mean, come on, for crying out loud. Bro, there are so many guys, you and I don't want to speak for you. I can look at it and say, do you not see these guys are never going to get over? And listen, I'm going to be honest with you again, Steven. I don't want you to get in any trouble. I'm going to give Steve a disclaimer. This is Vince Russo talking. Steve Austin has nothing to do with this. Listen, Steve, you know, listen, the mentality of the boys, because this is the business you guys were brought up in. The mentality of the boys is we're independent contractors. I'm going to get over on everybody. I want the spot. I'm going to beg, borrow, and steal to get the spot, and I ain't doing anybody else any more favors. That's the nature of the beast. That's the way the business was built. Who has the potential to be the next Stone Cold Steve Austin or The Rock? Where are they? If they're not there, something is wrong with the process.
So what do you do to fix it? They're recruiting. I know that Jerry Briscoe, who helped me out tremendously in my career, that I think the world of. I know that he still watches a lot of the amateur wrestling, brings some of those monsters that, you know, they're not going to really have a career after their amateur wrestling career is over. So trying to recruit those guys, guys from the pro football world, you know, if they're not going to make it in the pros, I mean, they're over-the-top big personalities. They have a lot of athletic ability, but can they coach them up and, you know, make them draw money? I know they're recruiting guys like that. I saw a very impressive class that was going into the NXT Performance Center 8 months ago, and it looked like a bunch of blue chip athletes going in there. But man, you know, when you talk about, you know, looking for the next huge draw, I mean, think of the huge draws in the history of the business as the single guys that they were. You know, not talking about your Road Warriors, who were a big tag team that drew money, or Rock and Roll, who was a little tag team that drew a lot of money, but just big, the single stars. There's only been a handful of them. And so it's not like they're growing on trees. They're hard to find. The it factor is a very special thing.
Come on, Steve. Let's look at the Attitude Era. Let's look up and down that roster. You mean to tell me there were 50 guys back there that wanted to be superstars and had the potential to be superstars, and there aren't 50 today?
Well, it was really interesting, because when you go back then, Vince, and you were there, and I've said this, I think I said it on my last, I was doing a podcast with Mark Bell from Super Training Gym, and he was talking about the Attitude Era, and I was talking about the crew of guys that was in that locker room, and I said, Jesus Christ, Mark, I said, hell, 3/4 of that locker room are going to end up in the Hall of Fame. Half of them are already there, and more are going to come. But it was such a special group of people, and you know, you're right there in the thick of it. Everybody was over, but it was just a real... I think it was very rare that we had so many guys that were so good, that were so over, and also with the creative freedom that was there. And you know, man, Jesus, back in, I mean, you might want to have a knife with you, because, the competition was so thick. Political structure was less. I'm not going to say that's the biggest problem, but, you know, we were able to go out on a limb creatively, and you were one of the ones, you know, kind of leading the charge with some of those storylines. So we were pushing the envelope creatively. Guys were just going crazy trying to get over, but it was just a special, it really was. And Taker was there, everybody was there. He'd been there 25 years, but that was a very, I think, unique situation to have so many talented, badass people on a crew. I think it's probably been, unless you go back to early days of NWA, when almost everybody was over then on that show, it was just a rare locker room. I haven't seen it, hasn't been repeated since.
Steve, let me ask you this. You know, you're around. I got to be careful.
I'm not around as much as you think I am.
But you're around once in a while.
Yeah.
Listen, here's what I'm not around at all, bro. They won't let me anywhere near a WWE locker room. But Steve,
how does it feel having this perceived heat?
Bro, I'm so blackballed. It's not even funny.
Okay, but so see, make your point.
My point is this. I cannot believe, and this has a lot to do with it, Steve, I cannot believe that today's core is anywhere near as passionate as we were. And I think that has a lot to do with it. Bro, I remember working with you guys. You guys would not settle for mediocrity, bro. You wanted every show to be great, every match to be great, every promo to be great. There was such pride and passion, bro. I when I watch the show today, that's not coming through my TV.
I can't say it's because of the boys, because I couldn't go to that locker room, and I am there enough, and with Cena still leading the charge, who's a very good friend of mine, I don't think that if he was here, I mean, I wouldn't put any words in his mouth, but as passionate as that guy is, I think he could speak to that for that whole locker room. I can't say that the guys aren't as passionate as we were. I can't say that,
because I think they are. But I think, Vince, it's like it's the micromanagement. It was the freedom. I mean, if you go back to the older days and some of the glory days when you were watching, and back at, you know, WrestleMania 1 through 3, which you really dug, those guys kind of had their marching orders or some direction, but everybody in that locker room was a character, and almost everybody in that locker room was over. I think it has to do with the creative freedom. And going back to the Attitude Era, man, you know how wild that was. Once I started coming on, I didn't give a damn. I was going to push the envelope. I was going to say the things that I said because, you know, I started gaining traction, started getting that confidence. And then, man, DX, strength in numbers, all those guys started working off of each other and getting confidence and just really coming out of their shell. Taker was still doing his thing. Mick Foley, all those guys. I'm leaving out names. Rock comes up. I mean, Nation of Domination, Ron. I mean, dude, it was like just a bunch of alphas out there, just, you know, kicking and scratching, trying to get to the top. I think these guys today in the locker room, I just think that the world, it's the whole world, Vince. Everything is so PC, and the micromanagement, I think everybody's almost walking on eggshells because WCW is not around anymore. TNA, with all due respect, they're still around, but nobody wants to work there if you don't have to. The other promotions, I don't need to name it. WWE is the big leagues. It's micromanagement, and I think the micromanagement has got the ceiling keeping a lot of people from getting over.
All right, Steve,
Does that make sense to you at all?
It does. It does, but I'm going to hit you with a couple of things. First of all, I want to make one thing perfectly clear. When it comes to from bell to bell, bro, I know the animal of the professional wrestler. When it comes to that ring, that's a very prideful ring. I don't think anybody ever phones it in. I think every athlete who gets in that ring is going 120%. They're busting their ass. They're doing the best they can at their trade. So when I say passion, I don't mean passion in their work. But Steve, he is part of the passion. You talk about micromanaging. When I was working with you, okay, I knew my writing talent had to match Steve Austin's in-ring talent and in-ring ability. It couldn't be less because I couldn't bring you down, bro. So I had to come up to your level. Now, I fully knew, Steve, if I would have brought you crap, you would have looked at me and said, Vince, were you smoking this afternoon? Like, what? And you wouldn't have had a problem with it. And Steve, I wouldn't have a problem. I wouldn't have had a problem with it. Okay, today they micromanage. I agree. But isn't it the responsibility of the performer? Because here's the problem, Steve. There's no respect for the performer. If they respected their performers, there'd be no micromanaging. I respected your opinion, take his opinion, everybody's opinion. Today, if we're micromanaging, it's because we don't trust our talent. Now, when I talk about passion, isn't part of that passion looking at the writer and saying, you really want me to go out there and say this? Isn't that part of the passion?
Nah, I think because there's nowhere else to go, and the system, dude, the system is so strong. I got my thumbs right here. I'm just trying to show you. I just think everybody's under the thumb. There's nowhere else to go. I just think that in today's system, they are trying to present the product in the light that they are, and everybody's told how and what to say everything, and it's just that they feel that these writers are coming up with these things that these people need to say because that's what they want from management, whether that's events, however they decide that. But I don't think it's trust in the performer. It's the fact that that's how they want it done. That's how they want it said. It's almost like writing, whether it's a drama, a sitcom, whatever you call it. They just want everything scripted. And I think in doing so, you take away the spontaneity of the business, the feeling that almost anything could happen, because back in Attitude Era, almost anything could and did happen. And so there's sometimes that sense of urgency, that energy is lost because you are kind of halfway, three quarters winging it. You know, you might have given me a couple bullet points to say or general direction, and same with my opponent, whoever it might have been at that time. But all of a sudden, you know, there was that ability for us to freelance, to fill in the blanks, follow the story, and ad lib a little bit and work off that crowd, feel the whole thing. And I think that's just kind of been lost in today's system. They want everything done their way.
But hold on, Steve. Hold on. With all due respect, if Steve Austin is in today's system, there is no way in hell you can sit there and tell me that you would have reformed and you would have fell in line and you would have not opened up your mouth and because of that never gotten yourself over. You would not have. I know you, and I know you were perfection. And I know you, bro, they would have had to sew your mouth shut to keep you quiet. But your feel is what got you over. So if guys are afraid, there's a million pieces reasons to be afraid. Well, you can be afraid, bro, but you're also never going to get over. And if you don't get over, that's going to affect the paycheck anyway.
I could say, you know, when I came in back in the day and we were, start off with the Ringmaster and then turn into the Stone Cold thing, and then everything started evolving for me and the way the business was back then, it was still a bit outlaw. It was the WWF that would turn to the WWE, but there was still that outlaw feel. It's like, hey, man, we're edgy. We're pushing envelope. Now we're in a kind of a war with WCW. And there was that sense of urgency to, man, every single Monday night, Vince, we was trying to, if you're a baseball fan, so every single night we was trying to knock a grand slam. Bases loaded, hit the ball over the fence. Sometimes we just hit a home run. Every night we'd hit a double, a couple triples. But we were always swinging for the fence. And I know they're always striving for perfection. They're still swinging for the fence, so to speak, but you just had that creative freedom to go out there and just, if you fell on your face, you know, so be it, you fell on your face. There'd be people out there, you saw it happen before. People would bomb on a promo, lose thoughts. They'd have some bullet points. Maybe they missed a couple of bullet points. You can see that look on their face, but they learn from that. I'm still a big fan of, hey, man, a couple of bullet points here and let the talent just go back and forth and kind of just not go back to the Attitude Era, but turn the guys loose on the horn to loosen up the product so that it feels more like, you know, a spontaneous or a shoot. We all know it's a work, but it's just too controlled right now.
Well, Steve, let me ask you this then. If you think it's not a lack of confidence in the performers, if you think it's not that, how did we get from point A to point B? Something had to happen along the way for the performers to lose that freedom. It's the same Vince McMahon. It's the same guy there, the guy that knows what worked during the Attitude Era. What changed the game?
Well, here's the thing. I remember when I got dropped on my head, I got back in the ring. I made it a couple of years. But when I left, you and I might talk, a couple bullet points, boom, I'd go out and do my thing, right? When I came back 12 months later, however long it was for my neck to heal up and everything to grow together, I started really, really handing us pieces of paper, which was your entire promo. That year that I was gone, and it wasn't because I was gone, but that's when that system started becoming a little bit more on paper. And I'll never forget the last few years, the 2-3 years, whatever it was, I made it back after that surgery. Those were more memorization type promos, and I never felt the same. You couldn't tell from a viewing standpoint what I was doing, but I never felt the same when I came back because the creative freedom or that ad lib ability. And when you come back, you're a little trepidatious, not trepidatious, but you're wondering if you're going to be received back because a year off is almost career suicide. And now you've been gone for a year. Is it going to work? So, man, all of a sudden, you just go to that piece of paper. And I never felt the same, you know, those last few years until I retired or quit the business. That's when things started to change, and that's when things were being written. And now, Jesus, if you go back, I left out in 03. It's 17. It's been almost 15 years, and so that system is firmly in place. When did you stop writing for WWE?
October 99.
Okay, Well, when I left out in 03, that's when the system kind of changed to, you know, those pages. And yeah, guys will still, you know, go out there and uncork one like a Cena or somebody like that who's an A-plus promo to begin with. But that's in conversation. He might be writing his own stuff, but it's not like it used to be. It's evolved, and they want to make it into a slicker, more well-produced show. And I see this look that you're giving me. Go ahead.
Well, because I want to ask you this, Steve. Listen, I don't want to hear the word evolved anymore because it's devolved. It hasn't evolved. It's devolved. It's gone backwards. It's devolved.
Devolved.
Now, Steve, let me ask you this question. Listen, the Attitude Era is over. That was a once in a lifetime with that talent and that roster and, you know, all the unbelievable. But listen, I have to ask you this from a business point of view. How can nobody look back at that time and say, okay, what worked? Why was this block of time so much more popular than it is today? Because one of the things would be the spontaneity. And we didn't have the handcuffs on, and the talent had the they could be creative. That would be one of the reasons. Why wouldn't you go back to at least looking at why and how did this work?
Man, that's a good question. But as the business has transitioned into what it has turned into, I didn't say evolved, I said transitioned. That's a good point. But I would say with all the corporate money that's coming in these days in business, I don't think house shows are what they used to. Well, I can say that for a fact because we were sold out every single night of the week. It didn't matter what night of the week it was. And that was because we had a great roster of guys. I'm not going to take all that credit. But so the house show business is down. Well, I think football attendance is down for in any sporting events. I think attendance is down. But I don't know what to tell you. As a product, I thought I had a thought there, but I guess I don't.
Bro, that's how I feel every Monday night at about 11 o'clock. Hey, Steve, here's the thing, bro. From a Vince McMahon point of view, I knew we had Stone Cold Steve Austin, who, like, bro, was larger than freaking life. But I also knew as a writer, the job was setting the table for Austin. How do we set the table for Steve that pop blows the roof off the ceiling? Okay, that was my job and Ed's job. He'll blow it off, but what do we create that people will jump? Bro, I can remember this night, and I know you were against it, bro. And I know I had to drag you for this one, but you gave in to me for this one. Bro, I could still remember the night you saved Stephanie from The Undertaker. I can still remember the freaking pop in the building. But that's what I mean, bro. I think that's another thing they would see if they go back. Guys were stars before they even came out because the table was set, the vignettes, the intro. Then they were put in that immediate storyline. I look at Kevin Owens now, and I don't mean to pick on Owens, but, bro, the guy has been there for well over a year. And I keep hearing the moniker over and over. He's the prize fighter. What one thing have they done that Kevin Owens is a prize fighter? Just because you're labeling him that doesn't make him that. But they do that with character after character. There's no depth to any character. Again, if they look back at history, I think they will see that art of every character had that, which bringing up the Stephanie point, that was a character trait of Steve Austin. Stone Cold Steve Austin, the rattlesnake, would freaking rip your heart out and eat it in front of your wife. But you had that one little, and that made the difference, I think.
But in defense of Kevin Owen, I'm a fan of the guy. And from one standpoint, he's an excellent worker. He's a really good talker. And he doesn't fit the body type. He doesn't look like a bodybuilder. So I'm always fans. Well, the guy has to be talented. Just can't be any guy. So I like Kevin Owens. Got to make him a bigger star through the writing, through the booking. Set the table for him. I think the guy is doing everything that he can. But if the storylines aren't there for Kevin Owens, he's working as a heel now. So you're setting the tables for him to bring a negative response. But that's in their writing.
Yeah, it is.
So you can't fault him on that.
I don't know. He's not giving the material. I mean, the perfect case scenario, bro, was he beats Jericho for the U.S. title at WrestleMania. They come back and beat him the next night. I don't know how you get anybody over that way. And I think that has hurt him. The 50-50 booking, bro, I don't know how you get anybody over with that. When Steve Austin lost a match, it was, holy shit, these guys win 1 week, lose 1 week. You're not going to – and that's why nobody's getting over, bro. So no, that's why I don't pick on him, but they haven't given them the material that he needs to get over.
Okay, so then let's talk a little bit more about the current product, specifically WrestleMania 33. But first, I need to take a pause for the cause and thank one of the sponsors who makes it possible for me to do this podcast for you for free. So thanks to my buddy, my former roommate, and now WWE Hall of Famer Diamond Dallas Page and DDP Yoga. DDP is so fired up about his Hall of Fame induction that he keeps extending his cell on the DDPY program. So now's the time to jump in on this life-changing program. Why you can do it for 30% off. That's right. Dallas is giving you 30% off the DDP Yoga Now app and all DDPY related merch. Just go to ddpyoga.com/Austin. The DDP Yoga Now app gives you everything you need to achieve your health and fitness goals. DDP's got tons of workouts, nutrition tips and recipes, a way to track your progress, and even offers motivation for those days when you need it the most. The app also lets you access live workouts from the DDP Yoga Performance Center. And thanks to the app, you can do DDP Yoga anytime, anywhere. Just open up the app, select and work out, and get to work. And like I said, you get all that for 30% off by going to ddpyoga.com/Austin. So get on the DDP Yoga program today and change your life. Just go to ddpyoga.com/Austin and take advantage of this huge sale. 30% off the DDP Yoga Now app and all DDP Yoga related merch. Go to ddpyoga.com/Austin. That's ddpyoga.com/Austin. Hey, if you're in the market for a car, then you need to check out TrueCar.com and the TrueCar app. TrueCar gives you the price and information you need to feel confident about your purchase. When you register with TrueCar, you'll see what other people in your local market paid for the car you want. From there, you can connect with a local TrueCar certified dealer and enjoy a more confident car buying experience. TrueCar shows you real pricing on actual inventory, so you see competitive pricing offered to you by TrueCar certified dealers for vehicles that are actually on their lots. TrueCar makes car buying easy, no matter if you're looking for a brand new or a used vehicle. There are over 500,000 pre-owned vehicles available to TrueCar certified dealers nationwide. And there are over 13,000 TrueCar certified dealers. And over 2 million cars have been sold to TrueCar users by the TrueCar certified dealer network. TrueCar users save an average of over $3,000 off MSRP. So when you're ready to buy a new or used car, visit TrueCar.com or download the TrueCar app to enjoy a better car buying experience. Some features not available in all states.
Steve Austin. Unleashed.
Okay, so did you watch WrestleMania 33?
Yes, I did.
What did you think about the show? Give me a letter grade on it.
Because it was WrestleMania, I'll say C.
Okay, I was going to go B minus. So we're close. Yeah. We're in the same ballpark.
Yeah.
Okay, what did you like the most about it?
It was WrestleMania. The pomp and circumstance. The entrances, the WWE production. I mean, bro, I said on my show the other day, if Jesus Christ himself headlined next year's WrestleMania, Triple H would make sure he still had a better entrance than Jesus Christ himself. All right. But, bro, the pomp and the circumstances, the entrances, the screens, the visual was tremendous. Here was the problem, bro. This is what I talk about, effort. I mean, Steve, you could have predicted every single outcome on that card. And, bro, you could have predicted, okay, bro, they don't have anybody to work with Brock, so they're going to bring Goldberg over. They're going to get Goldberg over on Brock. Now Brock's got an opponent. We're going to give Brock his win back at WrestleMania. It was so cookie cutter predictable. That's what I mean about passion, bro. That's what I mean.
But you can almost predict every WrestleMania from a payoff standpoint. Really, I couldn't pick the four-way between the girls. I thought they might put the title back on Charlotte there because it was Mania. I was happy that they left it on Bayley. I thought those four girls with Nia Jax did a really good job in telling that story and making Nia look like a monster, teaming up on her, getting her out. And then, you know, they got cut short on time, but the match itself was really good. So I couldn't predict that one, but going to predictability, let's talk about probably the biggest or one of the most important matches of the night, Undertaker versus Roman Reigns. Going into that, Vince, Undertaker, 25 years in the WWE, Roman Reigns, you know, he's the next guy. So I knew that Roman was going to go over in that match. And it was going to be, you know, when you can put a notch on your belt and you're one of the few guys that beat The Undertaker in a WrestleMania, that's good for your resume. That's good for your push. I mean, now he's got to sustain that. Just because a win doesn't mean anything if you can't follow it up with storyline and momentum of your own, doing your work, because there's work to be done on the backside of this. Continue the direction that they're going to go with this kid. But in that match, I knew who was going to win in Goldberg versus Brock, who I thought they knocked it out of the park as far as physicality and the timing of the match. Didn't need to be any longer than 4 minutes. Crowd was into that. They were on their feet. Their hands were in the air. And you knew Brock was going to go over on that because of the setup of the two losses before to build up Goldberg. And what a feel-good moment it was for Bill Goldberg. And then, you know, going back to the entrance of Triple H and then Seth Rollins, Triple H's entrance is one of the coolest I've seen in all the WrestleManias that I've ever seen. And then here comes Seth Rollins with his torch. And then at first, I was talking about the pay-per-view with Wade Keller, and I was like, here comes Seth Rollins. He has his torch in his hands, and he touches it to the ground. And the video monitors that are all the way down the entrance to the ring, he sets the ring on fire. So in theory, it was symbolic of him saying he's going to burn his kingdom down. Mm-hmm. But when you compare the two, Triple H had one of the coolest entrances of all time. Police escort. Stephanie's on the back of the trike. It's a badass Harley gimmick. Cool vest. You know, it looks like $1 million. And then Seth Rollins got to go out there with a torch touched to the ground and then walk to the ring. I mean, if you're trying to make this guy into a star, you know, he needed a cooler entrance. But I knew the finish to that match too, Vince, to go back to what I'm trying to make. They should have given Seth a better entrance. But in that match, you know, someone pointed out to me on my email, questions@steveaustinshow.com, hey, if they're trying to get this kid over, why didn't they have him go into the ring, pull out a sledgehammer, and have him initiate the damage to Triple H's quad? Because Triple H would go after the knee of Seth Rollins, and it made sense because, you know, the knee was injured previous to the match. But it turned out to a 26-minute kind of a... It was 15 minutes too long, 10 minutes too long. But if you really want to get Seth Rollins over, have him attack Triple H. Don't have him in sell mode all the time. Yeah, ultimately, Triple H does the honors. He puts the kid over in the middle of the ring. But just because you won the match, because the performance in the match was not stellar, the story was not captivating, you get a win. But he'd have been better kicking the shit out of Triple H and taking the pedigree, and he would have got over more had he kicked the shit out of Triple H and then get beat in the middle of the ring, then just get throttled during the whole match for the most part, and then end up with the win over Triple H. You see what I'm saying? But my point is, I could predict that. And I guess my argument is, in theory, you can almost predict every single match that's in WrestleMania these days because of the way the build is, and you know where they're going on the other side of the build, and especially you because you're a former writer.
Yeah, but you know, Steve, here's what I'm looking at. Say I was still writing today, okay, Steve? Let's face it. The freaking internet and these dirt sheet, right? They've killed the freaking wrestling business, bro. Let's face, you know everything that's going to happen. You know everybody's business. I'm still anticipating the big Steve Austin sex tape when that comes out. I'm going to be the first one to watch that. But Steve, say I'm writing for the WWE. Everything I'm reading, Goldberg's contract is expired. He signed for 3 months, yada, yada, yada. Brock's going over. I mean, bro, it's like 99.99%. If I'm reading that, I'm saying, let's give Goldberg a 1 month extension. Let's shock the crap out of people tonight. Nobody knows. Let's get freaking Goldberg over. Because now, Steve, so then we come back the next month and Lesnar says, if I don't beat Goldberg, I'll retire and never wrestle again. And then he beats Goldberg. But the fact of the matter is, you had that holy shit moment at WrestleMania. That's what I'm talking about. If I would have been reading that everybody knows this outcome, I'm saying, you know what, let's keep Goldberg for one more month. Let's shock the crap out of everybody. That doesn't happen anymore. That's why I get the feeling of going through the motions. That's what I'm talking about.
Yeah, but if you'd have beat Brock one more time, I mean, it wouldn't have worked. You can't beat Brock three in a row.
Yeah, but I'm not saying beat him. But okay. I'm saying, you know, maybe there was some kind of controversial creative finish, something. But I mean, I just, because everybody knew that was going to happen, I would have tried to at least come up some way to do something differently.
I can see your point. But then again, I don't know what else or how much Goldberg had left in the tank, what his desire was to do more, be more physical. I think that was probably the most physical 4 minutes of his wrestling career. He's been in longer matches. He had a great match with DDP back in WCW. Yep. There's a couple. But from the intensity standpoint, 75,000 people, time to deliver.
Good point.
I just don't know that you could get another match out of that. It was time. It was the rubber match.
Yeah,
but just from a production standpoint, I thought everything was pretty damn spot on. And when I say I give it a B minus, I mean in a positive light, because those few matches that could have went better, you know, like that Triple H that Seth Rollins match could have been shorter, just different story told in there. The SmackDown girls got short on time. That was a cluster because you have so many bodies in there trying to fight for that title. So they got shortchanged. They did as much as they could in a time that they had, but as long as the show was, I don't know. I thought it was a pretty damn good show.
Steve, I'll tell you what. Like, to me, and this is the first time maybe ever, it didn't feel like a WrestleMania to me. Now, maybe when they're writing this show, when they're booking this show, it feels like a WrestleMania to them because they know the end result with Taker. So maybe like that's the special part. But I mean, bro, like 2 years ago, you had Sting. You had Sting in AAA. You know, Sting well past his prime, but still there was the what are they going to do with this? Then last year, you had the Lunatic in there with Taker. So is this the match Shane McMahon, you know, breaks his neck? You know, you had that factor. I felt it was just lacking that WrestleMania. There was just something missing from it. And also, I'll tell you what I didn't like, Steve. There was no legend. There was no Austin. There was no Rock. I felt that, bro. There was that usually is a part of WrestleMania. That 1 year was what? You, Hogan, and Rock? Was that it? That made it feel like WrestleMania. I felt it was missing that this year.
Well, you know, on that front, since you bring that up, you know, I've been seeing all of my Google alerts lately. Oh, man, Stone Cold is on the outs with WWE. He's no longer with the company, this, that, whatever. All this speculation. I'm like, Jesus Christ. I just can't be at every single WrestleMania. I had a lot of personal stuff going on, and good stuff, and professional stuff that I was trying to take care of when all that WrestleMania stuff went down. I got an invite from WWE to be there. We never talked about, you know, me being a part of the show, just as far as being there as a Hall of Fame, an event that I really enjoy. But all of a sudden, all this, because I wasn't there, because I had a busy schedule, there's all these reports that I'm at odds with the company when nothing... it couldn't be further from the truth. I mean, I'm fine with the company. I had a bunch of shit I had to take care of, bottom line. I thought, you know, everybody was talking about The Rock being there. I assumed that The Rock was going to be there. So I'm watching the show, and The Rock never showed up. So I was expecting that because normally he shows up. I've been kind of gone since, you know, WrestleMania 30 in New Orleans, the one that you referenced when we were at the Silverdome. As Hulk Hogan said, the Superdome. But yeah, it's just, you know, I don't know about legends necessarily, but it didn't make me think. I skipped the opening part. I didn't see who sang what, the national anthem or the songs and stuff like that. I skipped right to the matches, so I didn't watch any of that. So it didn't feel like a big enough event to you. When you saw 75,000 in that damn outdoor stadium. And you know what's tough, Vince? When you have those outdoor stadiums, and they've worked there before, I guess, what, 2, 3, 4 years ago. When you start that show off and it's still semi-daylight, you just, it doesn't have that same feel the darkness or with the roof over to control that sound. So the sound escapes. And so then you still have the half-lit, you know, Jericho and Owens out there working their asses off. And, you know, you can still see everybody. It takes away from the atmosphere.
Yeah. Yeah. And again, you know, Steve, I look at everything from a writing perspective. I mean, that's just kind of how I look at it, the writing of it. Steve, I want to ask you this question, bro, because I wasn't watching the WWE towards the end of your career because I was working for TNA.
Yep.
Did you know the last match you had was your last match?
Yep.
Was there any pomp and circumstance?
Nope.
When you see Taker and you saw that, and bro, that was fantastic. I mean, absolutely, the emotion was caught. I give WWE all the credit in the world. 25 years of service, bro. That's the way you got to go out. When you see that, Steve, how'd you feel about that, knowing your last match kind of came and went with no pomp and circumstance and you're Stone Cold Steve Austin? It's like, did you not want that?
No, well, it was two different things. To go back to when I had that last match, you know, my neck was really starting to give me some more problems. I had some neurological issues from that pile driver way back in the day. So, you know, things were getting so bad, you know, I really barely remember that, but I remember having a conversation with Vince. I said, hey, man, you know, it's really time for me to get out of here. I got to take care of my damn health. And so I was going to ride off in the sunset. Business was still going pretty damn good at the time. So we weren't going to say, you know, all of a sudden, you know, Stone Cold Steve Austin, this is his last match, and then he's going to ride off in sunset because he's got neurological issues, because we didn't want to put, you know, a halt in the tracks of that tank that was moving along and still, you know, drawing big houses and doing good numbers. So we just made it my last, we kayfabed it. And, you know, it was just a match. And then all of a sudden it comes out that, hey, man, Steve Austin's not going to wrestle anymore. But it wasn't the focal point of the pay-per-view because we didn't want to turn viewership off. So we just kind of did it, kayfabed it. I left. And, you know, they moved on. And, you know, Triple H and Rock and everybody else would keep leading the charge. So I was fine with that because, dude, I was so beat up and my neck was so bad, I just needed to go. I didn't give a damn about the big send-off. When I saw what they did for Undertaker, I'll give you the story. I cherry-picked a few matches the first day because it's such a long event. And then I watched the pay-per-view in its entirety, other than the opening ceremonies from first match, and watched the whole event. When I watched Roman and Undertaker work the first time, I just turned it off right at finish. I didn't know what was going to happen. So when I watched the thing in its totality the next day, I was like, oh, my God, what a send-off. It was absolutely epic. I don't know of one thing that you could have done to make it any more badass or respectful than it was. So when I look at that, first of all, I agree with you. It was just absolutely tremendous. And respect to the guy who spent 25 years there with one of the best gimmicks ever created and the guy who pulled it off with absolute perfection. So then when I say, oh, I didn't get the big send off. Oh, man, I'm so over it and so cool with it. I left under the terms that I did. It wasn't your classic, you know, get a chance to ride off into the sunset on a happy note. But that's just the way my career started. You know, it took place. I started off in Dallas, ended up in Tennessee, WCW, ECW, WWF, E, on fire. Just box office sales and stuff that just were record setting. Then it came to an end, and I got out of Dodge. It took me a long time to get over that, Vince. About 3 years. You know, sitting in San Antonio, I've told the story before. I was hunting, fishing, drinking, not necessarily that in that order. But I got it out of my system. So, nah, man, I didn't need that. It would have been cool, I guess. But, nah, man, I'm totally, really, looking right at you. I'm totally happy with the way everything went down in my career. And to see what they did for Undertaker is phenomenal. No comparison.
Can I ask you a question, Steve?
Yeah.
Bro, you know I'm a big baseball fan. And, like, bro, like, it like the older I get, you know, mortality, you know, sinks in. And I look at all these ball players, bro, that had great careers, and all of a sudden that year comes, they're not there anymore. And I think back and I say to myself, if you're a professional ball player, bro, there's a good chance you were hitting a baseball when you were 3 years old. So you're literally looking at 3 to 40 of this is all I know. And I think of these ball plays and I'm like 37 years of getting ready for the game, getting ready for the game, getting ready for a game. All of a sudden it comes to an end. So like, Steve, when you tell me, you know, 3 years, you went off to the ranch. But like, even what was it, time that got you over it? Because like, I can't imagine, bro, even 3 years you being over it. I mean, this is what defined you. This is who you were. Was it time, or like, did something happen where you said, okay, it's time to go to the next chapter in my life? Because I can't imagine being an athlete like that, and that's all you know, and all of a sudden the limitations come with age, and what the frick do I do now? I can't imagine that.
Well, it was a deal. You've heard the old adage, you know, time heals all wounds. You know, it's the same thing with the business. As much as I love the business, and it hurt me to get out of it. And hell, when I was down during my neck surgery days, I'd drive 40, 50 miles to a Sonic, get a jalapeno burger just so I could feel like I was on the road. But you know, those 3 years in San Antonio, you know, I was living in a gated subdivision, and just kind of, you know, it was the R word. It was retired. And, you know, the R word always sounds cool until you do it. And if you're not mentally ready for it, which I wasn't, but I made 3 years. But again, there was it took a lot of – I drank a lot to deal with that, very, very frankly. Yeah. And I've said that, but I've never really just said it like that. Yeah, I drank a shitload of beer and stuff like that and, you know, kind of relive those days. But then, man, it's like, dude, I'm over it. And it probably didn't take me 3 years, but that's the 3 years that I was kind of in that mode or in that rut, if you want to call it that. But it was that one day I woke up and I said, dude, you've been doing this 3 years. You better get your ass out there to Los Angeles, because, you know, my plan wasn't to go into movies. Like, you know, The Rock's plan, that was his plan, and he did. So I didn't want to do movies, but I said, you know, I don't want to go back to driving a forklift either. So I said, in San Antonio, there's nothing here for you. You love to hunt and hang around your friends in the great state of Texas. But professionally, there's nothing here for me in the vein that I want to pursue, which would be an entertainment business. So that's when I moved out to Los Angeles, lived with Dallas Page for about a year, and then, you know, met my wife, and we've been together for 12 years. I go back and forth to Texas now, but it was just one of those things where, you know, enough time went by that I was able to say, okay, I'm over it. And now when I look back, you know, you got to realize, Vince, man, that was 03. If I couldn't move on after 14 years or 10 years or 5 years, then something's wrong with me. Because I see a lot of guys or a lot of people, not from the wrestling business, but in life in general, that just live in the past. The people that weren't even in a sporting event, but they're just hung up on their past. I don't know if it's a psychological thing for them, but they can't get into the present. So I left that all behind, man. If you come to my house, I mean, you really won't see a whole lot of wrestling stuff. And I'm as proud of my career as anybody could be of their career. But, you know, I don't really need the daily reminders. I have a couple things that are so cool you have to display, but mm-hmm. I don't live in a past. And, you know, WWE, they trademarked Stone Cold Steve Austin. They own that name. People will always know me as that guy, but I live my life as Steve Austin. And so mm-hmm. the few times that I went back and did things, you got to remember, because you were there for a lot of those times, when they brought me back, or maybe you were gone, but they would bring me back. And, you know, at my hottest, Vince, I was always anti-authority, anti-system. You know, I was a thorn in Vince's side and vice versa. So we had that natural feud. And so the Austin that, you know, started off as a heel morphed into this white-hot babyface who was always kind of a heel. He was always against the system. And so they would bring me back just to, you know, make an announcement, clash some beers together, but for a reason that really wasn't of high impact. Yeah. And all of a sudden, you just go out there, and you're not in the same mode, and it's not the same circumstances, and I'm just there clacking a few beers. I feel like one of those little gorillas that you wind up and with the two cymbals and just clap.
I totally get it.
So
man.
It's like when you're going there, and you're just phoning it in because they want you to phone it in, it's like, eh, I don't want to do that anymore.
Yeah, I get it.
And it's time for it's the new generation's time to have all the time and the focus. And if the time is ever right for me to go back and do something cool, small, I don't want to wrestle. You know, I don't want to be the focal point. I'm fine with where I'm at, but I don't want to go back to do nothing that is not of consequence or impact. And I'm not saying that I want to go back and do something of impact or consequence, because I'm good being on the sideline. I like to, you know, would coach, pick some people's brains, help them out, you know, critique things, give them ideas. But yeah, I'm done.
Yeah. Okay.
But you get me. I mean, because like your favorite baseball player of all time has got to be who?
Oh God. Well, Willie Mays, man.
Okay. Well, Willie Mays. Holy, is Willie Mays still alive?
Yes, he is. He's about 90.
But don't you think that Barry Bonds, Willie Mays, Hank Aaron, I'm guessing that they don't live in the past. All the home runs they jacked, but I don't think they're just sitting there right now. Willie Mays at 90 singing, God dang, I wish I was still playing.
Yeah, but see, Steve, that's the tricky part, because I get that too. Because here's the tricky part for me. And I don't know how you feel about this is, but it's how you're always going to be defined. Like, take me, for instance. Bro, if I could do a podcast now or do a radio show and never, ever talk about wrestling or have nothing to do with – be Howard Stern, all right, for argument's sake.
Okay.
That would be what I want to do. I would want to do that. But the fact is – because you're always going to be defined by wrestling, you're never going to be able to get away from it, and it's always going to be a reminder. That's what makes it difficult for me, because, you know, bro, I don't want to live in the past. But the hard part is when you're always being pulled back in the freaking past and reminded about the past, and a day doesn't go by when somebody's not talking about your past. It becomes difficult. I mean, for me, I know I've had a hard time dealing with that, Steve. I mean, there isn't a day where I don't wake up and it's like, oh, you killed WCW. I mean, bro, WCW was 17 freaking years ago. You know what I mean? And that's what makes it difficult, because no, I don't want to go back there. I don't want to relive it. But it's like, man, when that's how you're defined, it's just tough. But for me, anyway.
To also comment on the fact that, hey, man, it'd be cool for you to not be able to talk about anything wrestling related. I enjoy talking about wrestling. I enjoy talking to wrestlers, guys and girls in the business. And sometimes I'd rather talk to them just more than anybody else, because entertainment these days across the spectrum for me, Vince, is kind of watered down. The movie making business is different. All the CGI. I'm a John Wayne, Clint Eastwood kind of guy. And so everything, I guess even for my music, I'm still kind of trapped in that 80s, 90s hair band, all that stuff. You know, you're a big Kiss fan like I am. Yeah. But, you know, so just I'm still kind of I don't want to say I'm stuck in the past, but I like stuff. I like the music back then better. There's never going to be another Boston. There's never going to be, you know, those old bands. That music has changed. I don't like it. I like the old music better than the new music. I like the old movies better than the new movies. So
yeah, I'm the same way.
When it comes time to just talking to anybody, I think I could talk to just about anybody. The truth is, I don't really want to.
Yeah, I hear you. I hear you.
Well, hey, your podcast, The Brand.
Yeah, Steve, I'm on The Brand on Podcast One, you know, 5 days a week, Monday through Friday. And, you know, I mean, bro, I really got back to wrestling because, I'm like you, Steve. I was down on a lot of things and I heard myself being so negative. And I finally said to myself, Vince, if you don't have anything nice to say, don't say nothing at all. But then all of a sudden, you know, the emails and everything started pouring in like, bro, we want to hear your opinion. There's a lot of us out there that feel the same way. We need a voice. We want to hear what you have to say. So, you know, I'm back to reviewing Raw. I reviewed WrestleMania. I got a new show, Steve, though. I got a new show I debuted last week. It's called Castrating the Marks and the Dirt Sheets. And I play back the comments of all the dirt sheet writers from the week, the ridiculous markish comments they make. And I just castrate them, bro. I just cut them off right at the balls. They don't seem to like that, but it's a lot of fun. I just started that about a week ago.
So now that you decided to start talking about wrestling again, are you happy about that?
Yeah, I am happy about it, Steve, because I need to embrace. See, Steve, you got to understand, you and I are on two different playing fields. You are treasured. You know, people love you. You are adored. Bro, they hate me. They can't stand me. I'm the Antichrist. So, like, I'm always getting the negative. And, Steve, I think you know this. The older you get, I don't want no negative in my life. I mean, Siri, I'm getting too old for the negative. But I finally came to the realization. I got to embrace it, bro. I got to embrace what I did for a living because there are still a lot of people like me out there that long for wrestling. The way we knew wrestling, and I'm the voice box, bro.
Well, good luck with it.
Thank you very much, Steven. As always, bro, I appreciate you having me on the show.
All right, everybody, give me the go home cue. It's time to wrap up his podcast and ride off into the sunset. As you know, I'm down here in South Texas, about to make my way back to California in my pickup truck with my utility trailer. I don't have anything for you to watch this week. Watch whatever the hell you want to watch. But before we wrap this thing up, let me make a couple of plugs. ProWrestlingTees.com/Steve Austin has all the shirts that I wore while filming the last season of Broken Skull Challenge. And the best damn IPA on the planet is Broken Skull IPA at El Segundo Brewing Company. Go have a beer with Rob and the gang if you're ever in Southern California, 140 Main Street in El Segundo, right down the road from LAX Airport. You can also get Broken Skull IPA at Whole Foods and Total Wines if you live in California. And this is the best damn IPA in the United States of America. And if you ain't in Cali, check InsideTheCellar.com to see if they ship to your state. And you can find everything Steve Austin at BrokenSkullRanch.com, including the cold steel Broken Skull knife and the new Working Man's knife. I got to say one more thank you to all the fine sponsors of the Steve Austin Show. That's how I'm able to do this podcast for you twice a week for free. And you can find all of my sponsors at podcastone.com. Just click on the Killer Deals button at the top of the page and then click on the Steve Austin Show banner. Hey, folks, keep listening. The 60-second AP News headlines are coming up next. Until then, my name is Steve Austin. I'm heading back to California, and I will catch your ass down the road.
Download new episodes of Steve Austin Unleashed every Thursday at podcastone.com. That's podcastone.com.